Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you. Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
Bonjour, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the second ever episode recorded of the Low Mid Podcast.
Oh, yeah, we in this bit.
We lit.
Where we talk about things from a lower middle class perspective. As always, I'm one of your hosts, Huey Revolution. And with me, also as always, are my two very good friends and business partners. Let's start on my right with...
Ramil, what's going on, man?
And...
Nemo the Zeus.
You dig. So, we got a good show lined up for you guys today. We're going to talk about some trending topics. And then, as always, we're going to get into our top three list of the day, which we'll talk more about later. And then we're going to talk about our show and tell topics, where we bring something that we think should be talked about more to the light, to each other and you guys.
And nobody knows what our show and tell topic is.
Yeah, we didn't share them.
We didn't share them this week. So each one of our show and tell topics would be a surprise to everybody who's on the podcast.
I didn't share mine last week either.
Oh, yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did.
Nemo's on a streak. So make sure you guys leave comments letting us know your opinions on these topics. And as always, vote on whose list is better and give us some feedback on the show and tell topics as well, because we want to get you guys involved. We want to talk to you guys, build little community and stuff. You dig?
Big facts.
All right. So we divvied up the responsibilities of looking up info for the week. So who wants to go first, Ramil or Nemo?
It doesn't matter. I mean, we can start with the Oscars. It's fine.
Okay. Let's start with the Oscars.
The Oscars, of course, happened. The Oscars happened. One of the bigger stories coming out this past week was the Oscars. And the conversation surrounding the black presence at the Oscars. Mm-hmm. I kind of felt like that it's always something that's like, you know, but this year specifically, I felt like just because of course, like the protests I put that in quotation marks that we went on last year, the whole hashtag Oscars so white. That happened last year. And so this year, it seems like it kind of came off like it was, they just gave some niggas some awards to kind of quiet. Yes. In their mind, it's just like, okay, we'll give y'all what y'all been asking for, the recognition, the award, just so y'all don't have to create a hashtag and create an uproar about not being included. Mm. So I think that was partly the purpose of why. Not saying that these people who didn't win, like who won, didn't deserve it. I'm not saying that. Like they totally did. But I do think like the Academy this year was kind of like, okay, well, not the Academy. It's an Academy, I believe. Whoever decides who gets the awards this year, I think they definitely took into consideration the backlash that they received last year.
Of course.
So not only did they make sure that black people were nominated for shit, that the black people actually won shit this time around.
Yeah.
Of course, some of the biggest winners of the night were Regina King, Spike Lee, Mahershala Ali, the costume designer for Black Panther. I think her name is...
And much deserved to everybody.
Much deserved to everybody.
Yeah, it's nice to see Regina King still getting recognition.
Yeah, for sure. She's getting her shine.
Ruth E. Carter
is the costume designer who got the award for Black Panther.
Big ups to her.
Because the movie looked beautiful.
Yeah. And costumes for Black Panther were amazing.
They were on point. Basically, I just think the discussion around the Oscars should be around, like, what is our relationship as a community with the Oscars or award shows in general? Like, should we even give, like, merit or, like, any kind of... should we ascribe any real meaning or validation to these awards?
Wait, so are you talking about us?
Our community, us as a community.
Okay. I think we should because... Isn't it the award show for like films?
It's the biggest one for film.
Yeah.
So that in its own is holds some significance and carries some weight, because I know the Oscars have been around for almost a century,
forever.
Right.
But there is a touchy relationship between the black community and the Oscars.
Same with
Grammys, look at the first person of color to win an Oscar. One. An Oscar for a character literally called Mammy.
Hattie McDaniel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she had to go to the back room to get her award.
Right. So it's when it starts off like that, and then all the way in 2000, what was it, 17 or 18, where we had that Oscar so white thing, it makes you think, like, should we be putting so much effort into being like, oh, I hope we get the Oscar or whatever. What I think is, as a community, we should continue to press them and, like, call them out on the bullshit and be like, there's not enough black people here. But in the back of our minds, we can just, like, kind of not put so much weight into it. Like, we definitely need to press them every year. Just be like, you know, diversify the people that are voting for which movies become the top picks. And we want to see, you know what I'm saying? There should be, it shouldn't be every time we get an award, it's some sort of, like, subservient role or not a main, you know, hero role or some shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel that.
So we should press them, but at the same time, we need to start validating our own community.
Like, for sure.
We need to create some sort of award show for ourselves where, like, if we want to see this, like, representation, you know, we need to kind of create it for ourselves, because there's a lot of creators out there that people just don't know about because the general public only, like, looks at the big award shows and stuff. They don't go underground searching like we do and stuff.
Yeah, and here's what's flawed about big award shows like the Oscars and the Grammys. Is there a... I'm trying to figure out the word. It's the review team, I guess.
Yeah, the processing? People, the filtering?
Pick who
the people who actually... pick who are getting the nominations and the awards and stuff.
Yeah.
Even that's just super outdated.
Come on,
I know that they probably still use the same group that they've been using for the past, what, 40 years, maybe?
I don't know. I know
they're old white people,
Yeah, it's mostly old white people from what I've heard. Like, yeah, I know they've mixed it up recently, but it's still, like, you just look at the results. Like, you know, these aren't, like, 20-year-old black kids being like, oh, this movie is the best.
Yeah.
And we talked about this even in class. Like, even this year, Green Book was the movie that won, right?
Yeah.
In which,
best picture,
again,
right?
You have that white savior role that, well, as many people view it as that. I personally haven't seen the movie, so take my words on this with a grain of salt. But you have that white savior role, or you have the black guy not really being the main focus on his own. He has to kind of be paired up with a white guy for him, for their movie to win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. The Oscars is just... it's a mixed bag. We definitely need to press them just for the general public of people that don't really think like us. They just want to see representation. But also we need to create some sort of a award system on our own merit so that we can be like, these are the movies our community is proud of this year, you know?
Yeah, I think we should. I think that's the direction we should probably put the most stock into, is just creating our own platform for us to celebrate us and stop being so dependent on them to recognize us.
So all three of us are filmmakers.
We are.
If you guys didn't know, we all work together. We have a production company called Low Mid Productions, hence the name of our podcast. So, you know what I'm saying? Eventually, we want to make, like, really big movies and stuff, right? That do really well. So if the conditions of the Oscars remain as they are now, in the future, are you going to be, like, hyped to get an Oscar, or are you just kind of not going to care?
Me personally?
Yeah.
Me personally, it'd be cool to be nominated for an Oscar to get one, but I wouldn't predicate whether or not I was successful or not based on that. Yeah. If I don't get an award, I'm not going to love any less.
You're going to go to the show?
If I get nominated?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think it's like, especially, like, the first time I go, like, I would want to go and meet people. I'll meet people I look up to and stuff.
I feel you. Yeah. It like, the Oscars, like we said, hopefully it just continues on this train of ingratiating more minorities and, you know, people of color into award winning categories and having them win awards. If it continues on that train and it gets to, like, an even keel, I would go. But if we end up with another Oscars so white situation and start declining, I straight up wouldn't go. Because I'm like, how am I going to go in this room full of people that work not full of people that work just as hard as me and are people of color, and I'm just going to sit in this room full of white people and accept their award, essentially? You know what I mean? I wouldn't go if it's like that.
I would just
be, like, happy that I got nominated. I would probably send somebody to go and take it for me and say a speech on my behalf or something.
You know,
or I would stun out and, like, say some wild shit on it.
Send a video to the motherfucker.
So they might cut me off.
Some Drake shit, right?
Yeah, like, so they might cut me off.
Or, like, are you going to say some real shit if you do go?
I would say some real shit, yeah, if I got nominated and won. So people at the Oscars are listening to this right now and crossing my name off the list.
Yeah, but back to that point you were making earlier about we need to make our own. I feel like that's the direction that we're going to be headed in the next decade, especially if the Oscars doesn't open up their mind a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So listen, Oscars.
And especially since, like... it's coming out to the light that award races are just popularity races anyway.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, we already knew that.
Literally, I forget what class I learned about, one of my film classes, we talked about like how they're like getting an Oscar for a movie is like essentially like courting someone. Like, you know what I mean? It's less based on the skill of the movie. That, of course, that all goes into it. But, you know, it's about the time the movie's released, and it's about placating a certain members of the Academy and having these parties where you invite certain members to watch and, you know, shit like that.
See, that seems like a whole bunch of other
bullshit.
You have a whole bunch of bullshit that goes into whether or not you get picked to win. And it's like, we don't know how many factors really. Well, all the criteria that a movie needs to get these kinds of awards, or these people need to get these kinds of awards. These people bust their ass.
I'm saying, man.
You know what I'm saying?
Which is also why I don't. So, like some major film. You know what? Some major film person or someone of the future that's going to make a major film is listening to this. So if you put your heart and soul into something, and this is with all artists, don't just be looking for validation from outside sources, especially ones that from people that don't look like you. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They don't understand where you're coming from. They may not see your movies in the same way that you do. So just make your art to the best of your ability, and just be satisfied so that even if you don't get that nomination, like, you don't fucking trip out and be like, what the fuck? Like, make movies to make good movies. Don't make them for Oscars, because that would be whack.
It's whack as hell. And I would question your real intention. Do you just want to get awarded, or do you actually just want to make good content?
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying?
And, you know, sometimes when you're like a kid, you'd be looking at, oh, I want to do this for the award. But like, or like, you do something thinking you'll get an award and then you don't and you get sad. So, you know, just for the people out there who are very motivated by awards, don't hang your hat on that too much. Just make some good shit and send it to us. We'll look at it.
That's the first thing you should be worried about, just making it good.
Yeah, and just you being content with it and satisfied with it overall. Did you guys even watch the Oscars live?
I did not.
Of course not.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, I didn't watch them, but, like, of course, like, I saw the clips on Instagram. I think a cool moment was definitely the Samuel Jackson and Spike Lee moment, because that's Morehouse.
Yeah.
They both Morehouse, so.
Yeah, you know.
That shit was
dope.
There's
some camaraderie there, some good looks there.
And I definitely think he should have got an Oscar. Ben had an Oscar for Do It Right Thing.
Oh, my God.
He should have had an Oscar back then.
Don't.
Like, come on now. Have you seen Do the Right Thing, Nemo?
Of course I have, but that's another discussion.
That's another discussion. But before we get into the next topic, let's say our Instagrams, because we didn't say it last time and we haven't said it so far, just so in case we forget again.
Oh,
okay. So, y'all can follow me at Nemo the Zeus. That's everywhere. N-E-M-O the Zeus. Z-E-U-S.
You can follow me. This is Huey. Revolution speaking, at Huey Revolution on pretty much everything. Instagram, you know, SoundCloud, YouTube, and also me and Ramil and Nemo. We have a YouTube channel called Low Mid, so go check that out as well.
Yeah, y'all can follow me at King Ramil at Instagram. That's pretty much all that applies to.
All right.
More content coming to that Low Mid channel.
Oh, yeah,
for sure.
Very soon.
Be on the lookout.
But moving on to the next topic. Yeah, so one of the trending topics is the fact that Michael Cohen, who you guys probably don't know, he's one of
I've heard about him.
Oh yeah, he's one of Trump's former assistants, and Michael Cohen, he finally had his testimony on CNN last week, and he basically snitching straight up on Trump. So it's finna be over with for Trump.
You think so?
So what is he telling about Trump? Because I don't know that
and
part.
I, before you actually give the facts, because I don't know yet, but I do remember leading up to like this happening, I saw like some shit on the news about him basically breaking down about how like he gets out of jail, Trump wasn't riding for him, and he's like, I'm telling everything because this nigga was fucking did me dirty and shit.
Nick said, fuck you, nigga. I know all your dirty laundry, nigga. I'm finna air you the fuck out.
Like, how is Trump gonna do some shit? Like, that just showed you the arrogance of Trump. Like, he gonna do that shit, and then you get out, he's like, I don't know, nigga. We'll figure that shit out later. You know what I'm saying? We'll figure that shit out. Just chill, dog. Like, dog, I spent time in prison. Like, help me out. Like, nah, saying,
nigga, I'll help
that.
You when I'm ready, nigga. Hold
you know
up,
saying, nigga. Hold up.
Yeah, but that's one of the points I wanted to make is how much of a con artist Trump actually is. Michael Cohen, he's bringing that to the light in front of all these people. He's coming out and saying, yo, I've been working for this man for 10 years blindly, so if anyone else is doing the same, y'all will probably follow the same consequences that I'm finna face.
So give us some more facts, man.
Yeah, so it's like, what exactly happened?
So he had the Stormy Daniels thing. They had a whole lot of hush money.
Stormy Daniels?
Yeah, the Stormy Daniels case where Trump was basically smashing a porn star.
And, oh, yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah. And
Trump was smashing Stormy Daniels?
Yeah.
Like, currently or, like, back in the day?
like,
if he was doing,
I think it was like, what's it, after election? I think it was after election.
So he got elected and was like, hey,
I think I was some of this president pussy.
Presidential
pussy.
The inaugural address. All right.
Undress.
and of course, y'all know about the rumors that he's been colluding with Russia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he didn't really touch up that much on that, but he kind of hinted at it. And he pretty much, Cohen just confirms what we already know, is that he is a racist, a con artist. He's just doing it for his brand. He's not trying to make America great again. He's trying to make his brand great again. And Michael Cohen, he didn't know that until the recent years.
Or at least he's claiming that he didn't.
Because, you know, he might have probably been to about this shit. Come on now.
I mean, he's doing something positive now.
Yeah, he's doing something. But honestly, if he didn't realize that, he wouldn't be talking to us. Because not only did he tell us what he's been doing, he showed us a lot of documentation. Mm-hmm. He brought the checks that Trump signed himself from his personal bank to cover up for the hush money that Michael Cohen was sending out.
So did he say why he's doing this? Like, what sparked this?
Yeah, I was about to say, so when his senator
made him
have?
Be like, you know what? Well, fuck Donald Trump. I'm going to snitch on this motherfucker.
I guess when he went
to jail. What made him pull a 6ix9ine, man?
Yeah, I guess when he went to jail and he noticed that Trump was like, oh, this nigga's a rat.
And he didn't get him out of jail.
Wait, hold up. So when he got locked up and Trump didn't help him, that's when he figured Trump was a rat-ass motherfucker.
I think so.
He said Trump is a rat.
Trump said Cohen is a rat.
Trump said Cohen was a rat.
He tried to get Cohen to take the fall for his shit, right? Essentially.
I'm learning. I'm learning as much as y'all are, to be honest.
Oh, okay.
We're learning about the situation.
Because this is
the gist of it.
Yeah, this is a story that's going to go down in history. Because
you think so?
Yeah, because Trump is such a
global figure.
Trump does horrible shit all the time, man.
But
it's to the point where you think this is the one that's going to break him down.
Or at least one of the more memorable ones.
I think this moment is going to lead to his impeachment.
I
think so, because that's the way it happened. That's the way it happened with Nixon. Wait, was it Nixon that got impeached? I don't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I don't know either. But either way, did Nixon get impeached, Ken? Did Nixon get impeached? He did.
Oh, Nixon was the one that got impeached.
Okay. Yeah. So it's kind of the same thing that's happening with
my prediction is that this shit just blows under the wind
and low key. I don't think he'll be impeached.
That's my prediction, bro.
We hope you're right.
Yeah, but I could see Trump he'll just get on TV and say some fuck shit, and all his supporters will be like, well, yeah,
it's not true.
Here's another thing that Cohen made Trump realized that he knew he was racist. One time in private, Trump asked Cohen, can you tell me a country run by a black man that wasn't a shithole?
Oh my God.
And that was
We know Trump's racist.
I
guess you need the fact to support it up. I mean, back it up, because people are going to be like, well, he's not.
Yeah.
Like, see, this crazy thing is, we live in a country where we know our president's racist, but it's just like,
we have to
is it
prove
a problem right now?
That's how
we move day-to-day.
Because when Cohen, after Cohen brought up all these facts and stuff, the funny part to me was how the Republicans were reacting to this. They were trying to defend Trump, of course. They were talking about, oh, no,
your facts and all that shit.
Yeah, they're saying things like, oh, no, you're just mad that you didn't get the White House job. But Cohen was like, nigga, I'm working with the president. I don't want to be in the White House. I'm already good working with the president. What else did they say? Yeah, they were also saying things like, Trump never made any racist comments. I've been in private with this man. I know what he's like. Well, of course you've been in private with Trump. And of course he's not going to show his racist side to the Republicans.
And of course, if you're down for him, you wouldn't say that shit.
Exactly. Like, imagine, if you're on his side, you wouldn't snitch
on him. Imagine you're on his side and be like, Well, he did say nigger that one time, but you know, besides that, he's
not a racist.
Good guy.
You know, blow that shit out of the way. Yeah, you know what I'm saying. And I heard
lie. When did people stop lying? I'm not saying, you know, I know one way or the other, but I'm just saying all that shit. You can kind of throw that out when it's people that are that close or work for this motherfucker. Of course, they're gonna have his back. Because he's out the job, they're out the job.
It's time to get this clown out the office.
On top of that, he has a whole legion of people who are openly racist supporting him. So if that's any indication of what his ideologies are, if anybody's paying attention on the surface level, that should tell you a little bit about what this motherfucker believes.
Remember the whole shit with the Klan and him?
Yes.
I don't want to say well, take this with a grain of salt. I don't remember the exact quotes, but I just remember something with is like they're not all bad people or some shit like that.
He probably
did kind of remember people that were directly in the Klan. I don't remember. I don't know. Throw that
either Klan
out.
Or associated or have some kind of maybe general right wing
yeah,
beliefs.
He was saying some fuck shit.
Yeah,
he always says some fuck shit. So.
Yeah, he always done some dumb shit. He's been on some dumb shit since the fucking 80s when people were rapping about him, and now he's the president.
Now they're mad.
Now we're like, oh fuck.
Well, it makes sense when he wasn't in power. They were like, they can just laugh at this nigga now and try to get some of his money. But now he's the fucking president of the fucking United States of America.
And he really trolled his way into the office.
He trolled his fucking way into the office.
He literally memed his way into the office.
And because nobody, but you know why though? Because nobody believed that he could win. That's why he won.
We were laughing at that shit. And then his fucking numbers started to slowly rise.
On election day, listen, the night of the election, I was like, all right, we can stop playing now.
The meme isn't that funny anymore, guys.
And then we woke up and Trump was president. And we was like,
because I remember staying up. Oh my God.
You stayed up a whole night?
Bro, I stayed up to watch. I was so sad. I think I walked to the store because I was just so depressed.
Go get some Skittles.
Bro, Jalen, we had a math test that day.
Oh, yeah,
we did. And the whole school was dead as hell.
What a shitty day. Math and Trump as president? How does it get any worse? I remember walking to the gas station and everyone in the gas station was heads down, sad as fuck.
Damn.
You know, they usually be in there just turning up and having to get. They were like, nobody
was
saying
shit.
That was the tone. Let me get five on six dog. Let me.
That was the entire tone the day he got elected president. Everybody was depressed because even
so
at GPC,
surreal, man.
The whole vibe was like
we thought about making a short film about that.
Yeah.
Shit.
Oh shit.
We still keep that idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he's a dumb motherfucker. Been a dumb motherfucker, but
hey, man.
He's a rich motherfucker, so that's why he's able to get away with a
dumb
lot of
motherfucker.
Shit.
You know who else is dumb and rich? Perhaps
a lot of people. But who
isn't Kraft one of those people? Maybe.
I don't know if he's necessarily dumb.
Well, I don't know about dumb, but he's one of the
rich
people.
Now, wait. Before you continue, say his full name and say who he is, because when you guys are talking about Kraft, you remember I hit up the child. I was like, are you talking about
Kraft cheese?
That's because Huey is a meme, dog.
No, bro. I legit thought they were talking about the nigga that owns Kraft Singles.
Like,
I was like, who the fuck is that? Because I don't watch sports like that. I don't keep up with it like that, you know.
True.
Figures.
For those of you that don't know, Robert Kraft is the Patriots owner. He's a close associate of Trump, and he has some links to the hip-hop. I guess.
Yeah, he allegedly had some kind of hand in Meek Mill getting free, and possibly was on board with helping Meek Mill and Jay-Z with some sort of prison reform. Allegedly, I don't know if this is true, but that's what I heard.
So, because when I hear that, after hearing he sounds like a mixed bag to me because he's doing positive things with prison reform, but also you guys are saying he's been people have said he's racist and shit like that.
Well, I believe
he hasn't really shown it, but what's the negatives?
It's this whole case that's going on with the what's going on
right
with
now
prostitutes.
Right now, yes, it's the prostitutes case.
Mm.
Tell us about it, Rob.
So the prostitution case, as far as like I understand it, it was just like he. Well, actually, we talked about it a little bit beforehand, me and Ken did, about how, like, basically now what he's doing is, well, I think what happened was he was told that because you don't know this certain information, you can only get hit with a misdemeanor charge because you didn't know the full extent to which the soliciting of the prostitutes were happening. So because you didn't know.
I'm going to break it down.
Because you didn't know the whole process, you can just say, oh, I didn't know. And that'll help you out in court.
I don't know any black people that's ever helped.
Wait, what?
Because wouldn't niggas just be like, I didn't know. And people be, there's some
or is that,
it's like, just because you don't know doesn't mean you can't get charged.
That's
you can be an accomplice.
Well, and I asked that too. I was like, so I thought that ignorance was no excuse for the law or something like that. But then, what was it called? What was that term called again, Kinge? That,
plausible deniability.
Oh, yeah.
So that he has that in his corner.
What the, over some shit like I thought when it gets to shit like that it's just like you fucked up, like, you know what I mean? Plausible deniability is like I thought that
because he was just I don't know this to be true and I still think there's more to this story that has to come out but I think that he was just paying these girls to do sexual favors for him, but as far as like the transportation of them and the organization of the entire women who were doing that,
I didn't know it was a whole ordeal.
I think he's just paying women.
I thought he was just fucking some prostitutes.
You know what I'm saying? So because it's illegal.
I know it's illegal, but like,
so I think that's why he might not get hit with like a felony.
That's not as bad as like driving him around and, you know, starting a whole ring and shit.
Yeah, like being a charge of that whole thing.
We'll find out about more as it unfolds. You know,
But I think just more so in his case, the reason why it's even news is because his team did just recently win the Super Bowl. You have that, right? And then you also have like all of these like incidents that have just occurred within the Patriots organization, which is kind of like made that whole organization, like even with the Deflategate and now you got this with the Robert Kraft situation. You've had a whole bunch of incidents around that team that have just kind of made it a table of conversation. Man, so
that shit is. All right. Well, okay. Now I want to bring up a topic.
Mm-hmm. What's going on,
gentlemen? Okay. So recently an upcoming new artist released an album. You guys may know this guy.
Who could this be?
By the name of Nemo the Zeus.
Nemo!
Nemo the Zeus. I thought you were talking about fucking Lil Pump or some shit.
No, bro.
No, we're talking about...
Nemo the Zeus. Dropped a project. Let me give you guys some background information. Dropped a project called Black Rose. Released on the 28th of February.
Which was just a couple of days ago.
It was just a couple of days ago, you know?
Go please cop that and check that out.
So you guys can check that out. We're going to be talking... Actually, we have the artist himself on the show. So what
Nemo
we wanted to do was, you know, tell people to go listen to it and get Nemo. We wanted to pick the brain of an artist and get into what was it like creating this album and what were the motivations and themes for some of these songs.
And inspiration. And
what was it like working with some of the other artists? Because I believe Pewee Revolution makes an appearance on one song as well.
Who happens to be the guy that's speaking? You know, two of the guys.
Happens to be me.
Yeah, happens to be him.
So.
You know what I'm saying? So please explain that
process. I just have
a small part. These niggas.
But go ahead and get into it, sir.
All right.
Very good album, by the way, I just like to say.
Dope.
Yeah, so this is an album that I literally put all of my time and energy into, just because it was the only thing making me happy. Just hearing myself, like, okay, so like when I went into this, I wanted to make something that I wanted to hear my favorite rappers spit, or not exactly, but
that vibe.
Yeah, that vibe, but still like incorporating my elements and telling me things that I need to hear so I could keep on going. And when I was making it at first, I came up with like four songs, right? And then after I came up with those four songs, I was like, you know what? This sounds like it could be something. So then a couple months down the road, I came up with the title. A few more months down the road, I came up with the album cover. And,
which looks dope.
Yeah, then a month after I wrote all the songs or whatever, I just locked myself in the studio and just recorded it and mixed it and mastered it.
Talk a little bit about... What was your inspiration for the songs? Like, some of these themes are very sad, obviously.
Yeah.
What were you thinking of, like, as the overarching thing of, like, this is how I want this to sound? What's, like, running in the back of your head as you're creating these songs to link them together?
Okay, so what really helped me at first was the production of the album. The production was just addicting to me and different. It was something I haven't heard before.
Yeah.
You know, it's that lo-fi type of sound, but it's like modernized, and I don't know. The drums are just really fly to me.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Stolen Drums for the production on most of it. But I was just telling my story, telling whatever I was going through at the time, telling whatever was on my mind, and also just giving myself some motivation, throwing in some phrases of encouragement, like especially track two, I'm gonna be all right.
Mm-hmm.
That was
one of second favorite track, because I'm on one of the other tracks.
If I so by default, that's his favorite.
No, it's the best track on the album, sir.
Yeah.
No flex.
My favorite song is Last Day.
Yeah. Last Day, yeah. Let me talk about both of those songs. So
yeah,
first Last Day, I heard the beat and I was like, you know what, damn, I need to like really spit on here, like really talk about what's going on. So that's what I did. I was talking about...
Was this like when you were in the midst of, because you've dealt with depression, you know,
yeah,
you, on and off battle,
it.
You know,
yeah.
Was this when you were like heavy into dealing with depression?
Yeah.
And so did like, I'm interested when, because like, you know, depressed people make sad songs. And a lot of the times, you know, when you're sad, you listen to sad music, you create sad things, but it kind of helps you a little bit because... Like, I guess when you're listening to other artists, you're like, oh, they're going through what I'm going through, and they're where they are, so I know, like, shit can get better. How does, like, working on songs that are very sad help you work through it? Is it just like, oh, I'm just telling my truth, so it's just helping me turn something sad into something beautiful or whatever.
Yeah, it was kind of like that. I just wanted to make what I wanted to hear, to be honest.
What would make you feel better?
I guess. And I just wanted a really good concept around the album. That's where the whole Black Rose ties in.
And you know I love concept, man.
Yeah, I wanted the concept of the entire thing to be consistent, but like still very brief. That's why it's only 7 songs, 14 minutes.
Yeah.
That's
too much. But going back to, I already finished Last Day. Going to the song that me and Huey did.
Yeah, let's talk about that a little bit.
So
head ass.
Let's talk about that song a little bit.
Yeah, so
it's called No Response.
Yeah, that was just when I was writing that. I literally wrote that verse in a day because
I could say the same about my verse.
I just wanted to make something that at that point it had been like a couple months that I had sat down and wrote a song, so I was just like, you know what, let me just knock this out because this beat does sound hard as fuck. So let me just knock it out. I already got a flow that I want, so let me just continue to knock it out. But then, after I've recorded that verse, that's when my whole reality was like crashing down, because that's when my mom like interrupted my studio session. She called my entire existence shit, and I was living I was living a sad existence. That's what she said to me, and she called that shit. So that made me feel terrible.
I laugh at things that aren't funny just for people listening who are like,
yeah, so do I.
That's how we deal with shit.
Yeah, so after that, those words were kind of encouragement for me to want to finish the album, but it kind of made me not want to finish the song. So that's why I was like, you know, let me just have someone else come on. So, and I immediately thought of you because I know that you could spit. I know that you're adaptable to other people's projects. That's the finest thing about Huey Revolution.
Go on. I'm tall.
As these two pummel the hell out of each other right
I'm
here.
Cool. Continue.
Yeah. He's also fucking charming, if you didn't know. Like, it's like he can also
nice.
Rap and sing, and he dresses
I mean,
nice.
Well, go
he's
on.
About 6'1".
A bunch of shit that has nothing
like,
to do with rap.
Yeah, so
yeah.
Huey is like my light-skinned brethren, so I knew that he could...
I'm brown-skinned. I'm caramel.
God damn.
By the way.
It's a mocha
caramel, go ahead.
Dang.
Mocha caramel.
Dang.
Continue.
So he's my light-skinned brethren, so mocha that's caramel. Why I wanted him on there, because I knew that he could be able to like get into my world and be able to talk about what I'm feeling and what he's feeling, but also just in his words. Honestly, the project is an experience if you listen to it from front to back, in my opinion, because it really immerses you into my world, I would say.
So I got a question. What do you want people to take away from this album? What are some of the things that you really want people to get from this album that you would want people to get most from this album when they listen to it?
That was a professional ass question, dude. That was nice.
You did what I'm saying. Yeah, that was I haven't been sitting over the past 6 months. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that was a good question. But wait. Fucking repeat it, because...
So what do you want audiences to take away from your project? Like, when you were making this project, what did you want audiences to take away from? What still do you want audiences to take away from?
Okay, I want them to be able to pay attention to the lyrical ability that I put into there, because I just wanted to be able to express my emotions, but in a very poetic way, because... when I first started rapping, the first thing I was a poet, right? So that's the first thing that I want y'all to look at, the way that I'm putting these words and like telling my emotions. Second thing is the entire atmosphere of the thing, because your favorite song is Last Day. That song has a very good atmosphere, and that's why
it does. It puts you... what I like about it is that it really puts you in the like the... it's like when you read a book and you imagine the environment by yourself.
Exactly.
It's like that.
It leads you up to your own interpretation.
Day, I just imagine myself like walking down the street.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sad as fuck.
It
tells a story.
Exactly what I wanted from that song, because that beat, it just brings it out.
We're storytellers over here.
Yeah. I mean, so overall, the general consensus is that Black Rose is a dope project that you all need to check out as soon as you get the time.
10 out of 10.
You know what I'm saying?
You would give that shit a 10 out of 10?
Of course, yeah.
Why you pause? But no, but definitely go check it out. It's on SoundCloud right now, right?
It's on SoundCloud right now. We're gonna get it to other streaming platforms in a few weeks. Right now, we're just running through clearance issues.
It's 10 out of 10. But remember that shit, if nothing else.
Yeah, and one of the fans that listened to that project, he said it gives him catharsis.
Wow, great word. Don't know what it means.
Yeah, because catharsis is the process of releasing and thereby providing relief from strong or repressed emotions.
Oh, wow. So like that's a hell of a compliment. And your project did that for him, yes. So that's humbling.
Did anybody hear what I said?
No.
I said, so like when you nut. That's catharsis?
He could have described it that way, too.
Oh, catharsis.
He could have described it that way too, but hey, either way, that's a humbling comment.
Damn! So my project's a 10 out of 10. Damn, Huey, what are your fucking top three albums in?
Yeah, let's get into three albums.
Wait, I thought we were doing top three funny sounding racial slurs.
Nah, that's for next week, bro. Next week, man.
Oh, okay. Well, top three albums. That kind of puts me on the spot.
Of 2018, though.
Of 2018, yes. Yeah, top three lists for this podcast two is top three albums of 2018.
Yeah, we're gonna do the same thing we did last week. We're gonna go number three all around, then number two all around,
then number one all around, for sure.
And then you guys are gonna vote for me to win. So yeah,
that's how it's gonna go. And Nemo's gonna go first.
Okay, Nemo.
Oh,
number three album of 2018.
I guess I'll go second this time. All since right. Like we'll go in a circle.
Yeah, we'll go like that.
Damn. So yeah, this list was actually very very hard for me to put together because 2018. Was
Aziz specifically rap albums?
Hip hop rap, yeah.
Yeah,
we did hip hop rap because that's most like for the three of us, we listen to a lot of different types of music.
Yeah,
but rap albums are the ones we listen through the most thoroughly.
Yeah, predominantly. Yeah.
Like,
that's
for the most part.
Yeah, for sure.
Being black and all.
Yeah, and 2018 was, in my opinion, a very iconic year for music. So that's why this list was very hard to put together. But number three. Oh, number three. What am I going to give y'all?
Stop stalling.
Okay, number three, DiCaprio.
Okay.
DiCaprio 2 by J.I.D. Of course, man. That shit is...
My boy.
Man, that was so... That man, was
I put
such a good
niggas
album.
On the jib, boy.
Yeah, you see
back when he wasn't even... Yep.
Couldn't think please explain Nemo. Goddamn.
Yeah.
Let me just shut up.
Jid did a really good job at showcasing his amazing flow, his amazing writing ability in this album, and the production from Chase the Money, Kenny Beats, Sonny Digital, that makes it even better. And he still has his older producers from this first project that he has on there called The Never Story. I know J. Cole, he produced a song from The Never Story, and he produced a song from DiCaprio too. What else do I like about this? Man, Jid, he put together a very good album. I love the fact that he took a very long time with this project, and he was slowly releasing the big hits. I know when 151 Run came out, I was like, God damn, what the fuck? But then he came out with Off D's, which is even better in my opinion, because I love that bass boom and trap sound. So it just got better. There's a couple of quotables that really stuck out to me from that album. One of the quotables, he said on one of the last songs, he was like, "Oh, you gonna be a rapper with your dumb ass? Just cause you used to bump cast, talk fast, and tap a drum pad, you think the world's gone mad? I'm gonna be better than y'all trying to be. Y'all will see."
So it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
So
J.I.D. DiCaprio 2
for your number three album of the year. Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Solid pick. I'll go next, as we already established. But let me give a disclaimer to the people. I did not hear a lot of the most popular rap albums last year because fuck you. Because for a long time, as y'all know, which they don't know, my phone was broken as shit for a while.
Oh,
so
yeah.
A lot of the albums y'all were recommending me and sending me my way that I had no way to listen to because I listen to music on my phone, I didn't really lap back around to them yet. So there's a lot of stuff I haven't heard. But based on what I did hear, which is a decent amount of albums.
Yeah.
My number three pick, gotta give it to Room 25 by No Name.
No Name. No, okay.
Gotta
damn.
Give it to Room 25 by No
one.
Name.
Okay, she's fire.
She's so fire. This album, dude, it was so fucking pleasant to listen to, first off. Like, so beautiful to listen to. Really, like, encapsulates you in her world very perfectly. It's like the so far, because I know she's gonna make better stuff because she's still, you know, she's up and coming. This is the perfect No Name album so far to me.
Yeah, she has a lot of jazzy piano type.
She has a lot of her
production is live. Yeah. She's using live production.
Yeah, live
that's why it sounds like five.
I love, especially when it relates to hip hop music experimentation. Her album is like a near perfect blend of like R&B and hip hop, R&B and rap.
Yeah, right.
And so she has a couple of songs on there that also capture emotions very well, which you guys know I'm big on. She talks about a lot of shit on this album. Like, don't sleep on the lyricism. Don't sleep on the messages, because she's talking about a lot of shit. It doesn't just sound pretty. Talking about the black experience in America, especially related to being a woman. Talks about death on this album, concepts of death. She talks about just, you know, a lot of personal feelings and shit.
Yeah, No Name gets more personal on this project than she did on her last project, Telephone Calls.
Right.
So, yeah, like,
she's dope as hell.
Let me break down, like, in Don't Forget About Me, that's the song where, like, she's talking about,
that's my favorite from that track.
Yeah, it is so, like, dude, while I was listening to that song, because I still listen to that album, like, now.
Yeah, I still listen to that shit.
What I wrote down, I was like, it captures that uneasy mysticism feeling of thinking about death, to where it's like this beautiful song, but it's about death, because death isn't always inherently very sad.
Yeah.
And it's a certain mysticism to it. Like, we don't know what happens to us. And she's like, I just hope my mom remembers me. I just hope my soul lives on. You know, it's just this very like floaty sort of, oh shit. Like, I know
right
we all die
alley.
One day.
Yeah.
This is what I hope happens.
And I love how quiet she gets on most of these songs. It's like, you can tell she's
so
real intimate.
She's
very,
so
pleasant.
She's like very genuine and intimate.
She doesn't have to stun
words.
On you niggas yet. You
she
did.
Has like a very like calming, jazz, soothing, but like very lyrical, like kind of, you know, energy.
Yeah.
Like, you
lyrical
know what I'm saying?
Energy, but it's just so pleasant. Like, it's like, you know how there's like the, like in like Pokemon or some shit, there's like the cute animal that'll like fuck you up. That's how the songs are. They're like so pleasant, but they're so heavy.
That's a good analogy.
So, and then the last point I want to make is these features, some great ass features. Come on.
Ace,
Raven,
you know,
Lene, who I didn't even know about before listening to this, her voice on Montego Bay, that shit is so beautiful. Like, Jesus Christ. I gotta go check out some of her shit. And then you already know my boy Smino on Ace.
And Sabo.
That's probably my favorite song, because off the album, just, it's so fi.
That's my favorite off of Telephone, too, when they were on there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were on Telephone.
It's
too.
So good. And, that's my number three pick. Ramil?
My number three album. I kind of struggled with this list, too, though, because I did listen to a lot of music in the past year, and I liked a lot of music that came out in 2018. I think how I determined what was my favorite is you have to look at what you play, what you replay a lot. Like, I feel like, damn, I'd be like, damn, I play this shit all the time. This has to be my favorite since I choose to play it all the time. That's kind of like one of the criteria I guess I'll use for determining if something is like a top favorite of mine. But my number three hip hop album of last year was, after much like debate and deliberation, it turned out to be Nasir. By Nas.
Okay.
And the reason I say Nasir is because I wasn't a huge Nas fan going into this album. Of course, Kanye's production gave me more incentive to go check out this album. So when I listened to it, and it's only like, but it's seven songs, about 24 minutes. So it means it's concise. It's not too long. Like, you know what I'm saying? And I just think, Nas's rapping ability, I see why he's been categorized as so different from like other rappers, or why he's kind of viewed differently, because Nas tends to fight the beat. In a sense, like when he raps, like he's just spitting bars and bars and bars and bars. Like,
I
you know, his flow is kind of continuous.
That,
you know what I'm saying?
That was my problem when I first started, because like I'm a poetic ass nigga. So I would like spit a little bit like Nas sometimes. So yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like he does that.
That happens a lot. I think, I don't know how he produced the album, but that happens a lot when you like write before you hear the beats.
Yeah.
When you have stories to tell before
you
hear the beats.
I think that might be his process. But I'm not sure. So, but nevertheless, I found this album to be very enjoyable. I think it's a classic hip hop album, and the reason I say that is because
classic.
Yeah, I've been said that, like, because it's like, I think like the production of it and the lyricism of it, I think it'll age well. I think it'll age well, because like nothing out really, especially in the mainstream, with somebody Nas's level, is really putting out stuff like this. Like, the stuff we hear in the mainstream is not what Nas' album sounds like.
Okay,
and it has like a Like I said, the production is really good on it. I really enjoyed that. And I think, like, Nas's lyricism and rapping, especially on the song Everything, that's probably my favorite overall song. I think that's the best overall song because of the message and the beat and just, like, the whole aesthetic of that whole shit is just, like, damn, like, this is something that we don't really hear in hip-hop anymore like this in the mainstream. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? So, like, the fact that he, like, is able to put together an album who had it didn't sound outdated, but it had a more of a traditional hip hop feel to some of those songs. Right. I feel like in my opinion. And yeah, like Nas brought it, Kanye brought it. I thought it was a really good collaboration as far as like just them both playing to their strengths with that album. So, and plus my expectations were already kind of like, I didn't have any going into it. So I was more so surprised when I heard it and I was like, oh shit. Yeah. I fuck with this shit hard as fuck. So it's my number three.
All right. Now we've circled. What were you going to ask me though? Number two.
Oh yeah. I was going to ask you what about the hardcore Nas fans who said that this is probably his worst album. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I would say.
Wait, first, have you listened to any Nas albums?
Before? Yeah, this one made me go back.
Okay,
this one made me go back.
That one made you go back.
And yeah,
you think this one is better than those?
I think this one is my favorite out of his albums, though. But Illmatic is a classic. But what I'm saying is, like, I think that just based off like just what I like to hear. A lot comes from this album of his music. This is what I listen to the most. And I know about everything else now.
Yeah, White Label is hard. No cap.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
Rob put me onto that.
And you didn't grow up with the original albums.
I didn't come up with
them.
So
you probably have a more fresh, I don't want to say fresh, but like, you know what I mean.
A mature perspective.
Yeah. Than the average Nas fan. Yeah. But this album basically made you a fan.
Yeah, it did.
Wow. Well, see, that's good. Nas fans should be happy about that.
For this album, it was either you loved it or you hated it. And even when it got released, like a lot of the people that I see think this shit is dope. Mm. A lot of critics might have given mixed reviews, but that's different. That's different range. Yeah.
Then it's a different era of hip hop.
So yeah.
You know how that plays down. So Nemo, give us your number two.
Number two,
sir.
All right. Number two. This one's going to surprise many. I know it's going to surprise a lot. Number two is Die Lit by Playboi Carti. Oh,
okay. Well, no, I'm actually not that surprised because you did kind of.
I'm surprised.
Because he did kind of talk about that a lot.
I know you're not surprised, but I've talked to you about it. But, man, okay, so.
Just because Nemo is the your favorite rapper is Earl. Like, you know what I mean?
Earl and Playboi are the total polar opposites.
Like, literally as far away from each other as you can expect. So, the most lyrical, appreciative nigga sitting here, maybe, arguably. Love the Playboi Carti.
Yeah, Die Lit.
As number two.
Hey, man, the reason why.
Above Jid's album. Yeah. Just so you know.
The only reason why this is above Jid's album.
So when you guys are voting, this nigga put Playboi Carti over Jid in this specific context, but take my quote out of context. He put Playboi Carti over Jid. But continue. Not right. Like Playboi Carti. I'm just fucking around.
All right. The only reason why this is above Jid's project is because I played this a whole lot more than I did Jid's album. Like, this is one of those albums where I could put on any day and I would get instant gratification and instant satisfaction from. And it's mainly because Pierre Bourne.
He is a fool with those beats, though. Pierre Bourne be going the fuck off.
Pierre Bourne, he really
and Playboi Carti mix so well.
I call him Pierre Bourne, but anyway.
Oh. What?
I don't know about that guy. But
yeah, I don't know
Pierre
about
Bourne, with this project, he certified himself as a legit iconic producer in this hip-hop industry. And people,
you'll be a name to remember for sure.
Put some respect on that man's name.
Put some sauce on
his
name.
Because the sauce that he is using on his beats, like, he's doing it a little bit differently with the way he samples his beats and puts in the 808. In fact, one thing I should mention is that the way a lot of people do their 808s comes from Pierre Bourne. You know, YBN song. That song was a Pierre Bourne type beat off YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah.
It's funny because we saw that beat before he blew up.
Yeah, I was going to use that beat, but then YBN Amir
rapper
blew
life.
Up.
Yeah. That's funny as fuck.
Man, to each his own. Yeah. And but enough about Pierre Bourne. Let's talk about the actual artist. Carti. Now, I know he's not a lyrical guy, but he,
by any stretch,
he's bringing something. Yeah. He's bringing something new to the he's in his own lane. So he's bringing something extremely new to the hip hop industry, and that is the amount of energy and his delivery. You know, on this album, he experiments with the way that he delivered his vocals. You know, he's putting his voice into that higher upper tone or whatever. I've noticed that some rappers are starting to do that now.
Mm. Yeah,
and it's because of Cardi and probably Thug as well.
Definitely Thug.
And with Cardi's flow, I know it's not like an intricate flow, but his flow it just matches the beat so well. Like, it's not about what you're saying on this project, because remember, the name is Die Lit. You're trying to get lit. I don't want to hear about fucking cover, Black Lives Matter.
The cover says it all.
Perfect for that.
Yeah,
exactly.
Just him jumping into a crowd.
Exactly.
Like, who gives a shit
from the second level too? That's some Tyler the Creator would do.
Fuck.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck about life. So, give a fuck, nigga. I'm dying lit. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, so it's not about what you're saying on the project. It's about how he said
it. How lit you are.
Yeah, and that's what made it so enjoyable for me, and it's made it so playable for me. The replay value was like up there. I've been listening to this project from May till today, to be honest.
Man.
Hey, and I haven't even, like, I think I sifted through it once, and I get the appeal of Playboi Carti because he has nice melodies, and he has catchy music and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for lyrics, don't go to him. If you just want some hype shit.
No, if you're looking for lyrics, do go to him. But just be disappointed.
God damn. Or you could do that too. You could put yourself through that too. But I'm just like, if you're looking for lyrics just on like a surface level, he's not really, I think, in my opinion, for that. He's more so like, he's like, his album is called Die Lit because he makes lit party music mostly. Even though he was on Solange last album, which I did hear,
he's on Solange's album.
That out. That's an interesting pair.
And even like, I'll let y'all listen to it and we'll talk about that. But he's on Solange's album, which, by the way, is beautiful. You know what I'm saying? He has the appeal of just like melodic, and it's just like, it's like on the way to the function music.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's good for that.
Perfect. That's definitely a category of music.
On the way to the function
is a category for music.
It is.
We need to do top three on the way to the function projects or songs or something.
Because
people sleep on that category. Like, you know what I'm saying? When you're on your way to the party, you can't be listening to Beethoven and shit. You got to pop something on that gets you fucking hype.
You know what I'm saying?
That's a category, a serious category.
So Dyla is Nemo's number two.
People need to respect that. All right.
Yeah.
But,
circle back around to
Mr. Huey.
The H Man.
What is your number two?
The Houster. Gotta give it to my boy, Jonathan Cole.
I knew it. I knew it was gonna be the one or two.
That's not his first name, I don't think. But J. Cole.
What is
Jermaine?
Jermaine. Jermaine, okay.
Just fucking around. But yeah, J. Cole's KOD, Kids on Drugs.
That was a pretty good project.
Definitely one of my top projects for last year. You already know how I love themes and fucking like cohesion.
Mm-hmm.
Another reason why I love No Name's project is another reason why I love KOD. Like the cover, everything, the music videos, all of it played this role in a bigger story about trying to battle addiction, you know, and the different types of addiction that people can fall into.
Especially youth now.
Yeah, and then he gives a solution for it, his own solution, which, you know, may not work for everybody, but I like it when people don't just talk about something, they try to help fix the issue. He recommended meditation, which for a long time I was like...
Which I practice, by the way.
I want to start practicing it, actually. For a long time, I didn't want to get into it because I'm like, well, I'm going to be wasting time. I'm just gonna
it actually helps.
Yeah?
It actually helps.
So there you go. It was just really enjoyable. And then the way Cole, the beats on this project, you know, he's Cole. He's going to be Cole. But the beats on this project were new for him, a little bit more hyper. You know, people try to say he's sleepy and shit like that. The beats on here were hyper. He had some singles that were like hits on
ATM,
YouTube and shit.
Which is fine.
Yeah, ATM.
And Kevin's Heart was a hit, was a single.
Yeah, Kevin's Heart.
I didn't like that. I was the only one that
I liked it. And then,
did you see a video for it?
Probably the biggest song from the album that I guess technically kind of wasn't a part of the album. 1985, Intro to the Fall Off. What a great uncle giving you some advice song. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, just on some OG type shit.
And people took it as a diss. Wasn't a diss by any stretch. It was just like he hit both sides. He was like, for the older generation, he's like, you're acting like we didn't used to do this shit. And for the younger generation, he's like, I'm trying to tell you, when you get up and you get older and you see what I've seen, you'll see that I'm trying to give you some good advice. Like, you need to buy a house, you need to buy property, you need to tour, like, you need to do this and that. And for the older generation, he's sitting there like, how you going? Like, one of my favorite quotes, how you woke but you broke. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Type shit.
They're like, how you gonna try to tell everybody what to do but you haven't figured it out for yourself? Right. So what am I listening to you for? Like, there's you know, there's definitely something to be learned from people with that have just been around for a long time. But at the same time, don't be so harsh on people that are younger than you.
Trying to figure it out.
Doing some weird shit to you, because who knows? It might fuck around and work for them.
Yeah.
That's what I like to see. It kind of made a way to like bridge this gap. It was kind of a good song that we could have used as like, okay, let's talk it out. Let's the older generation, younger generation.
Kind of bridge the gap
a little
bit.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, and you know what's funny about J. Cole? I always find it interesting how J. Cole's always referenced like he's like this elder statesman of hip hop and he's only 34.
Yeah.
It's just J. Cole's usually years ahead of people in his like people. Yeah. J. Cole's perceived to be years ahead of his age. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And he's only 34. I looked it up. He's only 34.
Yeah.
So I was like, yo, he's still like relatively young.
Yeah, he's like a young man.
He's a young man. And in the context of hip hop, he's in the middle.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, he's like an OG of the game now, though.
Yeah,
like the way his position is
OG. He's definitely OG of the game.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And he's 34, and he has what, 3 studio albums under his belt?
Come on now,
3. So that's pretty.
It's like 4 or 5. Wait,
no, that was a legit question. I wasn't trying to be like,
I don't know. I didn't listen. I just heard picking up Cole, and I was like, come on, now
we gonna figure this out. So there's KOD. Mm-hmm. There's the For Your Eyes. There's 2014. There's Born Center. There's that one. The Cole story, Sideline story. So that's like 5.
5.
You said so Forest
five.
Hill Drive already.
Yeah, we did.
Cole World.
Yeah, he has 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
6 albums? 6 studio albums?
No, 5 because one of I'm looking at some
okay.
other shit.
Okay, so you have 5 albums.
Yeah,
so yeah, that's veteran status though, 5.
Yeah, veteran.
You already know the meme of him going platinum with no features.
Yep.
It's a legend for.
And P-Pow, the last song of that last album is 1985. It's called The Intro to the Fall Off. Yeah, so if his next album is called The Fall Off, then Middle Child serves as kind of a
Middle.
Like a bridge.
Bridge.
An outline of what I think what the next album would be. Because, like, on Middle Child, he's talking about, I got this drink in my
face.
So good.
Yeah, he covers a lot of topics in Middle Child. Mm-hmm. And I think it's kind of going to be, I think his next album is going to be what Middle Child is like, you know, with high beats, and he's still giving that coaching type of thing. But he's also doing, like, a concept thing. Where it's like, I'm on this lane, I got this stuff in my cup.
Yeah.
That's an idea that I think might happen.
And I like, it's interesting, like I love when artists experiment and try different shit. And I just like seeing like someone who, you know, you would not traditionally associate with like trap shit, trap beats or whatever, kind of referencing that and rapping about it. And
yeah.
Like, you know, I relate because we all have people who deal with this shit, no matter how lyrical or woke or whatever you are. You know, we can all relate to, you know, those hype tracks and songs and shit like that. You dig?
Yeah.
Let's circle it over to my man Ra.
All right. My number 2 album, and I struggle, like I said again, I struggle with this list, but my number 2 album, I'm going to have to give it to Astroworld.
Mm.
Because Astroworld had a lot of hype behind it. And like people have been anticipating that for about 2-3 years before it came out. And even like listening back to like Birds Night in the Trap and his first album, Rodeo, it's like, Travis has always had a very distinctive style, and it's heavily Kanye influenced and heavily 808s and Heartbreaks influenced, I think. And even one time he said he skipped all of Kanye's album and went straight to 808s for inspiration.
Yeah.
So it's like people have always been, and he's like, he has a very like distinctive sound because he's not even like the strongest rapper in my opinion. Like, mm-hmm. but he has like his melodies and his like his sounds are just very addicting and very, very nicely put together. So Astroworld is my number 2 simply because, like I said, it met the hype to me. And it had cohesion to me. The album of the Astroworld, the Music Park theme of the album, kind of it hit the point for me. And then like out of 17 songs, I have 12 favorites. That's hard to pull off.
Yeah.
Like it's like out of 17, it's like 12 of them you really, really enjoy.
Yeah, that's how it was for Jid's album.
You know what I'm saying? Like, with any album that you really enjoy. So like I put that as
especially
my number
2. Especially with these longer projects
like, that, like I said,
it's
again,
hard to
like,
make a good longer project nowadays anyway.
Yeah. Like he's Astroworld was really good in my opinion. I felt like now, like this is Travis's best production. This is his best music, I think. Period, better than anything else he's releasing. His other older shit is good too, but for me, Astroworld it was probably the biggest album of the year as far as like maybe streams, or I probably went to Scorpion, but it's like
I think it might have been over Scorpion.
Well, yeah, Astroworld is my number 2, yeah, because it's like it was a very cohesive album. It was hard to find any songs that were objectively bad.
Right.
Like, period. Like, it was that song, that album doesn't have one bad song on it. The features were pretty dope. Like, 21's feature, everybody's, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, yeah, it was just dope. ass album overall, and it's my number two.
Yeah, right. Definitely a good psychedelic atmosphere.
Yeah,
right. That's what made it addicting.
Nemo, what's your number one
album?
Getting into
2018.
The final round. Oh. These are our heavy hitters.
Oh no. Okay, so my number one.
Let's get it
for 2018 is definitely Beer Bongs and Bentleys.
Oh, are you serious? I'm about to say, oh hell no! Nigga, cut the mic off, nigga. What?
Shit. I would that just. If
and I
knew,
know people love that album.
Yeah, there's some good songs on that album. But if you guys knew Nemo, like we know Nemo.
Yeah, we would have been like, wait, whoa. Like,
okay, bro. What's going on?
Okay,
talk to us. Cut the mic off. We need to have a conversation.
All right. So the real number one for me is definitely Earl Sweatshirt's "Some Rap Songs."
You gave in.
Yeah, I gave in, but it's only because not enough people are talking about it, in my opinion. So true. I wanted to go ahead and put some light on that. So for me,
Beer Bongs and fucking Bentley, you asshole.
Yeah. So for me, I was able to. Like really, really connect with this album. Other than Blueface, this was the only album I was listening to for a good month. Because
go
that's
proceed,
a whole other
sorry.
Discussion. That
proceed.
Should be a discussion on another
proceed.
Day because the three of us.
Let's
are
not even
very
do it. Proceed. Proceed.
Yeah. So the way Earl spilled his emotions on this album was just fucking crazy to me. It was just so good to me. I know that since this album was very personal and he didn't really give in to the trends of what's going on in hip-hop.
He did not at all.
Yeah.
Which I liked it.
Which I appreciated, actually.
Yeah, so I knew that this album was made for himself, but I know that the fans will get the most gratification out of it.
Yeah.
Because, like you guys said, I mean, well, like we all agreed on, he didn't give in to the trends and... he did most of the production on this album, and a lot of people are calling it his version of Mad Villain because of how the beats are sample-based.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people are saying that.
Yeah, the beats are sample-based, and, you know, he's incorporating all these things and how short the songs are as well, and the fact that it's a lot of songs, but you can get to it very quickly. 15 songs, only 25 minutes. Man, put that on repeat, please. Put that on repeat. One of the quotables that no, there's two quotables that really like stuck out to me. And like the second song, he was like, "Nigga, muffle my pain and muzzle my brain up." That was fire to me because as black people, we tend to have this tendency where we muffle our pain and we kind of muzzle our brain, meaning that we don't really. Tell people what we're going through, and we don't show people
mental health is a big stigma in our community.
Yeah, we don't show people the bad stuff that we're going through because that would make us look weak or whatever.
Well, we've been trained to normalize our pain.
Now we've been trained to normalize
we'll do
it.
A lot of it
now it's actually getting out to the light.
Yeah.
Another line he said was, "Found a reason to live. Doubt could be an abyss. Keep fallacies off your lips. See casualties in the wind."
It's fire.
Like the
very poetic.
Man,
if you guys can see, Nemo's like doing a little dance right now.
Yeah, Nemo's over here like that shit just got him in the mood
like,
and shit. Like,
hold up.
That shit put me in a different fucking dimension and shit. Hold up.
Yeah, take off his headphones and listen to the album.
Yeah. So for this song, I mean, for this album, it really isn't about the sound for me, even though it sounds amazing. It's more about what he's saying.
Okay.
December 24th is my favorite.
I would definitely
song.
Call that an experimental album.
I love December 24th.
Album.
Yeah.
It is an experimental album. Because, like, I love the way he incorporates 808s in there. But, like, you can't really tell that there's 808s in there. Because, you know, they're just in the background of the samples. Yeah. Giving the samples that extra bounce.
Yeah.
Yeah, Earl's dope. I enjoyed the whole aesthetic of that album because the aesthetic was just like, it's just, even the title, "Some Rap Songs," is so general and so vague. And then his album cover with like that blurry picture, which I like. I like blurry pictures because I do them too. So it was like, it was cool seeing that. It was cool seeing that. I was like, damn, I've never seen a rapper or like even an artist really have that as their cover before, like an artist as big as him. So that was cool just aesthetic wise. And it kind of gave more, insight into what the whole vibe would be of the album before you even listen to it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Because they're literally just some rap songs. I can't really give a name. They're just rap songs.
So, wait, would you say it's cohesive?
It's very cohesive.
Strongly cohesive?
Yeah, the transitions on there is what makes it so easy to listen to.
Yeah, and the fact that the songs aren't really long either.
Exactly.
He's very concise with them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think my favorite from that album is Nowhere to Go. or Peanut.
I felt that. Yeah, those are cool too.
All right, my number one pick.
Huey's number one album of 2018. Hip hop album of 2018. I'm actually interested.
No, I'm just kidding.
I'm actually interested.
Number one, 2018. Gotta give it to Astroworld.
Wait, really?
Gotta give it to Astroworld.
Wow, okay. So we share an album.
We share an album. Joint custody of an album. gotta give it to Astroworld, bro. Like, just what you said, that was probably the album we're talking about replay value. Still listen
hello,
to that album.
Hello, replay.
That was probably the album I listened to the most that year. I won't speak too much on it because you bigged it up a lot. But, man, like, the way he like, created an atmosphere. He created Astroworld. Like, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
What else did you like about that album?
Yeah, it was very, you know, yeah, like, it was very psychedelic. It just very immersive. And, like, man, I don't know. It just sounded so good.
You know what else
sounded
made
really
it good?
The way him and the features and the production, like, there was, I don't know, looking back on it, it's not like the songs were wildly different, but like the production for the songs were wildly different, but they were different enough and fit together so well.
Yeah.
That was just like a perfect melding of songs. And it's long, 17 songs, but I didn't skip any tracks when I listened to it. I don't think I can say there's a bad song on that album.
You can't say it's a bad song. You get that?
Say,
you get what I did there? You get what I did?
I get what you did there,
that shit was clever, right?
Yeah. Gotta give the Daily Dad joke.
Daily Dad joke.
But yeah, and I think Can't Say. Well, I think that was my favorite song off the album.
I thought it was R.P. Screw.
Oh yeah, it is. R.P. Screw. I'm tripping. But yeah, it just sounded really good, and it was fire. Like it was an immersive experience, like going to an amusement park.
Like you can't tell me this tour.
It was the perfect Astroworld album. What he wanted to make, he hit it out of the park. So
yeah, I feel like this is the album Trav has been trying to make the whole time.
Yeah,
I was never on his side. I never understood the appeal of Travis Scott until this album.
And yeah, and even when you heard it, you was like, okay, this shit is beautiful.
Like you go back and listen to some of his other songs, like especially from Rodeo, and you could see the path leading.
Yeah,
he has
for
some
sure.
great songs on his other projects. Yeah. It's like this one is just like taking most of those and like putting them together and meshing them together.
Right. Somebody said this is either this is like his graduation.
It is.
Like at that point that was Kanye's apex. At this point this is Travis's apex.
He turned him into Travis Scott.
This is that project.
He's an established mainstream artist, a big hitter. Now he's a heavy hitter.
Come on, man. He was at the fucking Super Bowl.
Yeah.
There's some issues with that, but
this is the album that puts him in that conversation of who is the icons of the mainstream. If we were to like compare the mainstream to the NBA, then I would say Travis Scott would be like a Chris Paul or a KAT. Carl Anthony Towns.
I would say he's bigger than that. I would say he's probably in the realm of maybe he's definitely at least a Paul George right now.
Paul George. What about Dwayne Wade? Well, actually not.
Dwayne Wade's retiring.
Yeah, and I'm not a vet though.
I'm gonna just sit here and just
listen. He's not a vet. I would say if we're gonna compare current NBA players who are currently hot and doing great shit, like compared to rappers, I would say definitely in the realm of a James Harden, PG. He's that big.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say James Harden. Then I would
he's
say
that
James
big
Harden.
Right
yeah,
now.
You know, yeah,
like you did the
sure.
Super Bowl. Look at Huey trying to be like, yeah, I really did this shit. Go ahead. Like definitely doing the Super Bowl, which like I said, we have our opinion about that, but it's like just the fact that he got that check to do that, and the fact that his album hit number one, and he sold over half a million in an era where it's very hard to sell records.
Right, so it's got to be my number one, man. Just based off the way it came together, was just great.
All right, so then
pass it.
Actually surprised me a little bit. That did. Yeah. All right, my number fucking one hip hop album of the year after much deliberation, and I had some honorable mentions too, but we don't got to get into that. Yeah. But like my number one hip hop album. I think still, I'm gonna go with Daytona.
I knew it.
By Pusha T. I'm gonna go with Daytona, and the reason I go with Daytona is because that album was so concise and sharp with focus. It's just pure luxury drug game rap, and I can't even relate to that lifestyle. But the way Pusha T words it in, and like you would, and he has like a very specific niche audience that he caters to. You know what I'm saying? So it's like hearing that album and not even being able to relate to that lifestyle, but just still kind of understanding what he's saying by listening to it. And then the fucking beats were incredible. You know what I'm saying? Like Kanye killed the production. And then just like That plus Pusha T's, you know, rapping ability, which is not outshined by Kanye's production, because that's actually hard to do, because a lot of times Kanye's production will outshine the rapper in some cases. But it was an even match for me, and Daytona's definitely number one, in my opinion.
Yeah, Daytona, I actually went back and listened to it, and yeah, it is as fire as everyone says. Like, man, he completely immerses you into this world of, you know, just the drug game. And just fucking, like, talking shit about other niggas and stuff. And, like, why are you doing this shit?
Yeah, man.
And Kanye's production is what makes it even better. Because coming into this, I hated Pusha T. On God.
Really?
On God.
Why did you hate Pusha T, though?
He sounded corny to me. I hated all his features. I did not care.
Look at him.
Yeah, he sounded corny to me.
To each his own, though, I feel. Hey,
so, but he changed your mind.
Yeah, so this project changed my mind, because like he comes into this project very raw. He's very brief. He's not in there too long, but he says like,
hold up, dog. We too mature for that, but I feel you.
What are we talking about?
He ain't last too long.
He came in raw. He was unbriefed. Excuse me, sir. Oh, I see why you like this album. Nah, but continue.
This is an album that I wanted to put in my top three, but I feel you. There's just so many good albums.
Yeah, and it's like, so is this album gonna make you? Have you ever heard any of his older stuff?
Not yet, but it's gonna make me want to like dive into it.
At least, you know what I'm saying. At least get your feet wet with him a little and see what it's about.
It's gonna make me like go to his other stuff, because I know he has another short album, but yeah, I'll talk about that.
Yeah.
So let's just run down our top three again so that people can vote. Yeah, let us know who you think had the best pick, as with every week.
The best list
of albums. So Nemo's was from 3-1.
All right. Number three, I said, was J.I.D.'s DiCaprio. You know, he's amazing lyricist, amazing flow. I can't wait to see what he does with his career. Number two is Die Lit by Playboi Carti, because of that energy and that youthfulness that he brings. Number one is Earl Sweatshirt's Some Rap Songs, because I love the idea of it. I love the bars that he's spinning on there, and I love the beats, too.
Mm. You think Cardi will be making songs like that when he's like 30?
No.
How old is he now?
He'll get introspective, like 21.
Oh, yeah, okay.
30? But okay.
Like Offset? On Die Lit, he gets a little bit introspective. Oh. He goes like, I got a lot on my mind. That's
deep as
fuck. But the tone is still lit. It's like,
I got a
I'm going
lot
through
on my
shit.
Mind. Hey,
I don't know how I'm going to make it.
My grandma just died. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Grandma, funeral.
Late. Hey, yeah. Okay. For me, it was number three, Room 25 by No Name Gypsy. Just a beautiful, immersive album with some great topics, great point of view. And you know what I'm saying? If you like, if you support women in hip hop, vote for my list. Otherwise, you're sexist.
So, oh my God.
Number two, gotta give it to, I said, J. Cole, KOD, Kids on Drugs. Another great thematic album, followed through on the theme. Was just really dope. And number one, got to give it to Astroworld. It got me lit. It's got some introspective tunes and shit on there, so it really hits both sides. It's on your way to the party music and sitting at home sad music. Mm-hmm. And just wanting to, it's like just a great vibe for that album. So
yeah. And also I'm just harping back on the Astroworld thing. I think Coffee Bean too really helped me enjoy the album, because that's him actually just that's the most I guess rapping he's ever been, so I appreciated that from him.
Not that he's ever been, but definitely on this album.
Yeah, on this album too.
Look at like his freestyle from XXL. This nigga was like rapping.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm gonna have to check that out. Well, that was from like some years ago.
He was on there with like the
2014, right?
Yeah, I have to go check that out again.
One of them years.
Did you get to reiterate what your number one album was? Did you say that? You said that, right?
Yeah, some rap songs.
Okay, so yeah, my top three albums, number three, I had Nasir, just classic hip hop feel, classic hip hop energy. Production was great. Nas' lyricism, while at some points I can see where you can poke holes in it, but for the most part, I thought that it was pretty sharp, especially on Everything, which I think was his best rapping performance on the entire album. Mm. Number two, I had Astroworld for much of the same reasons we had as number one. It's a great overall cohesive album for the most part. And the production is not super diverse in the context of the album, but it just fits so well with that theme and what he was going for.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's hard to skip a lot of those songs. And Travis, like I said, it had a lot of hype to live up to, and he took his time with it. And you can tell that he put, this is like his baby, like, the one that, you know what I'm saying, he really polished and made sure it sounded great. And so I think he succeeded at doing that. And my number one album was Daytona by Pusha T. I just think it's airtight in cohesiveness. The beats are excellent, I think, for the most part. Exquisite. And Pusha T's rap, he just brought it, man. He just brought it. Like, he has a very, like, he has precision with his flow. Like, he's, like, that kind of, like, dun, 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 and like he don't go super fast. He's very slow and very methodical with his beats. You know what I'm saying? But if you like listen to him, he has some really good like metaphors and some nice wordplay. So I think that's definitely my number one album of the year. So
yeah, so vote for your top picks. And now let's segue to our show and tells. Who wants to go first?
Do you want to give a brief description?
For anybody who hasn't listened to the first episode, and go back and check that out. Show and tell is when we, the three of us each go and pick a random topic, or, you know, just something out there, piece of art or something that we bring to each other and talk about, like literally like show and tell, when you're a kid, like we're bringing up something that we think people don't talk about enough. Or is like, you know, underrepresented or
they may not know,
or that you may not know about. So, we just want to bring some light to that. And
to add the surprise element, we didn't even tell each other what our
show and tells were.
And we're probably going to start doing that from now on. Just not telling each other and just being like, oh, what did you bring to show and tell?
All right. So let's get into it. Am I going for it? I'll go first. Okay, I'll go. So for this show and tell, like recently, I've just been interested in knowing about, and don't ask me why, just knowing about the barber trade and the history behind barbers. Like, nobody ever thinks about that. I was like, so what, like, what is the history of barbering? So I looked it up, and actually barbering the trade goes back to all the way to ancient Egypt, unsurprisingly, even based on how much you know, how
of
much
course,
you don't
black
know
people started
you know what I'm saying
barbering.
So I think the most interesting thing about that, other than the fact that it goes all the way back to ancient Egypt, which we all know was probably a dope ass time in the world's history, barbers originally were very, very high class. They were viewed as high class individuals in that time. Usually always not only were they groomed people, but they were like scientists also. It was very common to find a barber that knew scientists and astrology and all that kind of stuff.
Forgive me if I'm wrong, but weren't barbers also associated with medicine?
Yeah, they were. That too. They were associated with medicine. They were associated with having a wealth of knowledge of other things other than just grooming, even though because you groomed, you are a very important figure in society because people put a lot of stock and still do put a lot of stock into their appearance.
Yeah.
So especially, you know, back in those days, I find it very interesting to know, like, and then it's kind of like, I don't know if it's devolved from that to what we think of a barber is today, because it's like nowadays, we don't really think of barbers as having like a wealth of knowledge on those type of subjects like they had back then.
Yeah.
It's just, you just got a nigga who knows how to cut your hair fine.
It's more specified,
man, now, but
a quick tip, if you have any questions about like grooming and shit or like what razors, ask your fucking barber, because I asked my barber for like razor bump cream, what razors to buy, and they all have been like, ask your black barber if you're black, like, you know what I mean? If you don't have a black barber and you're black, I don't know what you're doing either.
What the fuck going on?
You're not cultured. Buy. Like, I haven't had razor bumps in like forever now because I got some cream.
And also, just to tie into that too, this is like a side note, but apparently, like, a young man's first shave was considered a important part of his coming of age ceremony back then. They had a very important place in society and in antiquity. So I thought that was just interesting, just to note.
Of course, the first barbers were black.
Of course, because the best barbers are black.
Come on, now, that's not even. It's just a fact.
It's just a fact. Screw, we can't even have dialogue about that.
Don't downplay it.
Yeah, that's my show and tell topic.
Come on, nah.
That was dope to me.
Yeah.
Nemo.
Oh, we're on me. Okay.
Yes.
So for my show and tell, I want to bring to you guys a wild theory I got. All right. Hear me out on this.
No.
Fuck. Okay, next.
All right, my turn. So for what I brought to
go ahead, Nemo. Goddamn. Shit.
All right. All right. So short songs and albums are the new wave.
Correct.
That's your theory?
Yes. And let me further explain to you by that. You know, let me start by going off on something that Huey said earlier. You know, he said longer albums are getting harder to make nowadays. So,
yeah.
Longer good albums.
Yeah. So people's attention spans have definitely decreased.
For sure.
Especially in this age of time where we get everything fast, we get all of our dopamine like right now. So people move on with music quicker and quicker. So why not just make a short album that is consistent, concise, and it's easy to listen to for the viewer? And what another thing about short albums is it's not about, well, it's more about what you're putting into that time. You know, like I listen to songs that are like 1-2 minutes or whatever, because you know what they're doing in those 2 minutes is what sticks with me. And what I hate is when I hear a four minute song, but only the first hook, only the first verse is good, only the hook is good.
Yeah,
and I know a lot of you guys do that. You'll listen to a song with three verses, but you'll only play the first verse.
Why not just
shorten that down? You know what I'm saying? You don't need those extra verses. I mean, if it could help with the song, of course it could help with a song, or just put those ideas on a different song on the album, make the album longer. I mean, have more songs, like 17 songs or something, but like just make it 30 minutes or something.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times with longer songs sometimes just drag out, and you know, they're just trying to keep with tradition of like, oh, a rapper has like a 5 minute song.
Yeah.
Fuck you mean.
And
then they're just at the end of the track just saying the hook for the 80th time and shit.
That was my biggest stipulation with the Gunna album. He had a lot of like 3 minute songs on there or whatever, and I know with the hooks would sound fire, the verse would sound fire, but then the verse, he'll go into the second verse still talking about the same stuff, then he'll go into the third verse still talking about the same stuff, and then he'll come back with the hook, and it's just like, oh.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically the formula. Yeah. So what's the theory, though? Is there a theory, or is just that's just an idea that you like, or an observation that you You're like wanted to point out?
It's an observation / theory
that's going to be the new
standard of shorter albums.
That's going to be the new standard, and it could stem from a classic album called Mad Villain. You know, that song had that album had 24 songs on it,
wow,
but it was only under an hour or something, because each song was like 2-3 minutes. You know what I'm saying? Doom, he would pack a lot of content on that album, you know, because his flow is amazing, he has the lyrics or whatever, and then the Madlib production is what keeps you going along with the album, and that's what really makes it like easier to go along, because like they're so short, he's giving you so much content.
Mm.
And it just makes you easier. It just makes it easier to digest. That's what I'm thinking about from a consumer's perspective. Make it easy for the fans to digest, because I know they already complain about how much investment an album is.
Yeah,
just
it
why
is.
Why not
a lot,
make
though.
It? Just why not make it short?
That probably will be the new wave. Yeah,
I think the only thing though is find that balance between giving them enough and not leaving people wanting more.
Exactly.
That's the only balance, because even with 444, Jay-Z's album, it was 10 songs, mm-hmm. but it wasn't long at all. So even after the end, I was like, dang, some of those songs I was just getting into them and then they were done. So I still like the album, but I'm just saying, like, I think that's finding that gray line between I give them enough but not give them too much.
That's what the hard part for the artist is to like find out how to give them that content. Just give them a whole bunch of content, but keep it short. That's the issue. And here are some examples of albums, really short albums, that ended up being classics. Illmatic's one that has 10 songs and it's only like 30 minutes or something.
Yeah, Illmatic's a pretty good album.
Daytona is one, 7 mm-hmm. songs, 24 minutes. Kids See Ghosts, I know a lot of people are talking about that.
Yeah, I love that album.
Some Rap Songs, obviously, 15 songs, 25 minutes. The Question Mark album by X, that had 18 songs, but it was like,
X, it was like 25 minutes. The first artist that I saw making that wave,
really doing
that, especially with songs, making short songs and just being like, that's the song, I don't need to add some extra shit onto there, like,
yeah. And he's one of the people that kind of helped this theory like get
popular.
Popular, I guess I could use that word. That's what makes this theory like popular, I guess, is that X is bringing that to the table.
Also, I would throw Solange's latest album there too, at 19 songs and only 39 minutes. So she's kind of following that same kind of trend of making shorter, longer albums with shorter songs, which I think is good. It helps carry the album.
I hope that's the new wave.
Yeah.
I hate it when like I'm really getting like, just give me the highlights with these long ass movie length albums and shit. And I'm just like, bro,
That's slick. Why
I'm not saying that much. You dig?
Right. That's like why my shit was only 14 minutes and 7 songs. It's because, like, I didn't want people to be bored with the album, you know?
Just, yeah.
Just say what you got to say, make it interesting, and get out.
Yeah. And that was going back to like the Daytona thing and the whole seven songs thing that Kanye did this past summer. He already kind of caught that. It shows how where he is of the wave. Now he was like, now people are being overwhelmed with all these long ass albums, and here comes Drake. And then it's like, it comes Drake with the longest album.
Five songs.
Like two discs for one album. And then for me personally, just on that, just to pick on Drake real quick, Drake, you could have just, if it was just side A, in my opinion, that would have been good enough just as one release by itself. You know what I'm saying?
Whichever
side you prefer, I just think that he could have just at least split it in half. Like, don't give us 25 songs, give us like 11 or 12, you know what I'm saying? Or give us 11 and an interlude or some shit. But like 25, I think that it's good that you brought that up, because like I remember I did hear somebody reference Kanye. It was put to see reference Kanye saying that it was like, people just been overwhelmed with these short albums, because people think that they caring about quality, not quantity. At the end of the day, you care about quality and not quantity. So if you can and I know it's probably hard for some artists to cut some songs, because it's like
cut them off and just make it as like a little side release
thing. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Or every artist has their thing specific to their album and what their vision is. So I know that can be tough, because originally he said it was probably 10 songs, and Tiana out of the five releases had 8 songs. So she was like, I gotta keep this one on there. You know what I'm saying? So I understand where the politics can kind of get in the way of the artistry a little bit, but I think just for consumer's sake and quality's sake, don't just add the songs in just for streaming numbers, which we know some people are notorious for doing. Yeah. Just keep it concise for the sake of the quality.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I think short albums are definitely better.
So, Huey, what's your fucking show and tell, my dude?
My show and tell. Okay. So, New York City. You guys familiar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a city in New York.
Oh, shit.
If you
Revelation.
Did not know.
Like, fuck.
But they recently released a law to prevent discrimination against natural hair. And
it's about damn time.
If you don't know what that is, that was Rock clapping.
That was me clapping. That's about damn time.
Interesting sound. But so I'm just going to read the I'll just read it. So here we go. NYC Commission on Human Rights Legal Enforcement Guidance on Race Discrimination on the Basis of Hair. Try to make this kind of brief. Anti-black racism is an individual and persistent form of discrimination across the nation and in New York City. Anti-black racism can be explicit and implicit, individual and structural, and it can manifest through entrenched stereotypes and biases, conscious and unconscious. Anti-black bias also includes discrimination based on characteristics and cultural practices associated with being black, including probations on natural hair and or hairstyles most clearly associated with black people. Bans or restrictions on natural hair or hairstyles associated with black people are often rooted in white standards on appearance and perpetuate racist stereotypes that black hairstyles are unprofessional. Such policies exacerbate anti-black bias in employment, at school, while playing sports, and in areas of daily living. So the actual law says, the New York Human Rights Law protects the rights of New Yorkers to maintain natural hair or hairstyles that are closely associated with their racial, ethnic, or cultural identities. For black people, this includes the right to maintain natural hair, treated or untreated hairstyles, such as locks, cornrows, you already know, and or the right to keep hair in an uncut or untrimmed state. So the reason I brought this up is because it's 2019, and it's crazy as fuck that New York City. I'm glad that they did. That shows a lot of, you know, that takes a lot to be like, yeah, we've been fucking up. This is bad. I'm not giving y'all I'm not giving y'all props for it, because that's just what should have happened.
Yeah.
But it's a good thing that you did that. And more, I mean, it's just sad that we have to enforce laws for this type of shit, and then that it just can't just be standard to be like, oh, the hair that naturally grows out of your head is fine. Like, we don't have to fucking
fight
and whiteify
and die for that
just for a fucking job. And
yeah,
you know what I mean? And I just think it's crazy that had to happen in 2019. But this shit does come up. We were actually talking about this in one of my classes, issues in the African American community, and girls were in there. And yeah, I think a lot of this, one thing that's that I didn't think about is this affects women heavily, because you know they have more hair than us. They're going to be making more styles and switching up day to day. And it was a lot of women
on the website that I went to talking about how they were getting discriminated against, and their bosses would be saying, oh yeah, that's fine. And then some superiors would come in and be like, oh, that's unprofessional. And their boss would make them change their hair. And it's just like, wow, like the hair that grows out of your head, they're telling you that it's unprofessional. Twist can't have, like, you remember like all these stories of schools banning braids and shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck is
going
on? Did
you remember that story that one time that this young girl, like they said her afro was distracting?
Yes.
At school, you remember that, right?
Yeah.
Just that whole bullshit, like our hair is offensive to people. Like that whole kind of bullshit.
But you know what that boils down to.
Yeah, we already know.
Racism. And
the bread and butter of America.
It is a real thing that I guess people don't think about enough. Like, I know even us, at least I'll speak for myself, at least me personally, you know, and like how the girls were describing that, oh, they'll show up to the interview with the straight hair and then they'll wear their afro and all this. And it's just this ingrained thing in our community to where we have to suppress the elements of us that truly make us us in order to gain recognition from white superiors and get a job.
Talk that shit, Huey. Talk that shit, Huey.
You know what I'm saying, man?
Talk that shit, Huey.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's just like, the fuck is going on? I'm glad that change is happening, I guess, but it just really reminds me that shit is wild out
there. It reminds you of how racist and how embedded the racism is in this country.
And what I was going to say, because like I remember when we first got out of high school and I was trying to get a job and shit, like, you know, you'll have people in your family telling you to pick out your hair and shit.
Yeah.
And I would be doing that shit. I'll be picking out my hair, fucking dork. Trying to make it look all neat and kempt.
Oh, neat and presentable.
Yeah, you dig? Like, even though the way that it grows out of my head is the way that it grows out of my head, and white people have messy hair, it's like a style or some shit.
Yeah, or they can
that's
just...
the temp fade style with the swoop. Like, you know what I'm saying? But when we do it, look at this nigger with these natty dreads
these
and shit.
We have to make all these concessions just to be accepted or to fit in.
And it's just fucked up.
I'm done with it. I've been done with it.
I just wanted to call a call to action. For me, my thing was, if I'm going to work somewhere and I can't have... what I realized was... And then all those places where I picked out my hair, I didn't get the job.
So fuck them anyway.
They're
most likely some 750 jobs that we're going to quit in a fucking couple months anyway. They're not no fucking career jobs.
Yeah. So, but anyway, first off, natural hair is beautiful.
As fuck.
So... I just want to call the action to rock your natural hair. If you are someone who wears natural hairstyles, rock that shit.
Especially black. Especially black.
And I'm happy that those black women told their stories and that something was done about this. Mm-hmm. At least in a big and populous city like New York City. Yeah, we definitely need to stop. Come on now, stop the bullshit.
It's like they were all in the media room and they was like, you know what, guys, we can probably just get rid of this. They're like, you know, this is fucked up, right?
Man, well, can we stop?
The hair, we can move on from the hair
about
shit.
Like your hair, think about how ingrained that is. Like, that's literally something that grows out of your body, a piece of your body.
That society says you have to, like, you have to make concessions for
make
that.
Make it like this certain way. Like, what is this, Kim Jong-un?
Get the fuck
like,
out of
the
here.
What the fuck are you doing?
And I don't even like shaving policies. I think that's a part of it too. That really applies to our hair, if you think about it. Mm. Because they'd be like, if a white person's hair isn't past a certain length, they won't really tell him to cut it or him or her to cut it. Yeah. But like, if we like most of our hair, like even at the diner halls or whatever, you've got to shave your beard. Or you got to like, at the hotel, you have to get your hair clean cut to work there. I'm like,
yeah,
I'm not doing that shit.
Fuck that.
Like, they want everybody to either look...
you have to look neat. Unless you're white, then you can have a long hairstyle because you can just slick that shit back.
You can just slick it back. Exactly.
You're
so what they're really saying is just get rid of that nigga hair. In principle, is what they're saying.
Literally.
So, yeah, I'm glad that New York City did that. It's a long... It's
can we
sad
stop the
that we
bullshit,
have to do that.
Please? Everyone. But, like, I know it's not going to happen, but can we stop the bullshit?
We're going to be... Some of you who are going to be pushing for it to happen, we're going to be fighting for it to happen for sure.
If I can't wear my natural hair there, I don't want to be there.
Exactly.
I don't want that job, but fuck it. I'd rather would just be at home.
Exactly. If I can't be me...
Like, come on now.
That's a part of having pride within yourself.
Like, come on.
It's just loving your hair and loving it enough to wear it in any situation.
Yeah.
Give a fuck.
Come on now.
Luckily in film.
Hating like shit.
We have a little more freedom, though, with our hair.
Yeah.
We should.
Yeah. Luckily. But yeah, like, come on. I want to see more.
I want to see everybody have that right.
All these jobs that are considered, what do you call
those? Professional corporate jobs.
Because come on now. Yeah, I remember that shit. People would be like, oh, yeah, you're going to have to cut your hair. You're going to have to pick it out. And then at a certain point, I was like, well, fuck that shit.
Yeah, I ain't got to sacrifice who I am for no $7.50 an hour.
You did.
Fuck out of here for Kroger, nigga.
Man, can we
Kroger?
If that shit, that bullshit starts happening, more frequently here. We need to do the same shit and get the same.
No, I'm pretty sure it's just so institutionalized. People don't even acknowledge it, or people don't even call it out. People just expect it to be a part of the protocol. And I think that's the problem. We normalize that shit. That shit is not normal for somebody to be telling you in order to have an opportunity to make a livelihood. You have to alter your hair to our liking.
That's a definition of just anti-black.
Anti-black. That's just literally anti-black at its finest.
Cut your hair off. But yeah, that's what I wanted to bring up.
All right.
Yeah, that was a very relevant topic.
Yeah.
So I think that pretty much does it for us today, though, right?
Yeah, that pretty much wraps it up for us here at the Low Mid Podcast.
For the Low Mid Podcast.
Your boy, Huey Revolution.
Ramil.
Nemo the Zeus.
Let's just say our social medias one last time. You can follow me at Huey Revolution on everything.
You can follow me on Instagram at King Ramil, R-A-H-M-I-L, King Ramil on Instagram. If you want to follow me on Snapchat, it's King underscore of Shy 23, Shy, C-H-I.
You can follow me anywhere, Nemo the Zeus.
You can follow me anywhere.
Yeah, I'm on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, all of that. Nemo the Zeus, N-E-M-O-T-H-E-Z-E-U-S. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and we appreciate you guys for listening, and we out.